You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm Alexis Kenyon. Coming up on today's show, tomorrow is Bird Migration Day. We hear about an event at Boulder's Walden Pond. After that, it's Sports Talk with Jimmy and Then.org, our weekly look at local nonprofits. Following BBC Headlines, Connections comes your way. And then at 9:30, The Morning Sound Alternative brings you 2.5 hours of eclectic music until noon. That's all still ahead this morning, but first, these headlines with KGNU's Benita Lee.
Severe thunderstorms have caused flooding throughout Colorado, which may have contributed to one death. In some areas of Denver, almost 2 inches of rain fell in Thursday's storm. Flash flood warnings were issued for parts of Boulder and Weld counties. In Colorado Springs, a passerby called 911 after spotting a body in Monument Creek, which was running fast and high from the steady rains. Emergency workers and police later recovered the body from a rocky area. Officials are investigating how the person was swept into the creek. If there's a silver lining to all this rain, it's that severe drought conditions in parts of Colorado have eased. Denver Mayor Michael Hancock is criticizing Texas Governor Greg Abbott for what the mayor is calling an act of political theater. KGNU's John Kellen has the story.
A bus carrying 41 migrants arrived in Denver from Texas yesterday, sent to Colorado at the direction of Governor Abbott. The Texas governor said on his Twitter account that he'll continue busing migrants to sanctuary cities like Denver until the Biden administration secures the U.S.-Mexico border. Axios reports that the arrival of migrants from Texas yesterday marks the first time a state government has sent people to Denver. Since December, more than 10,000 migrants have made their own way to Denver, straining the city's emergency operations. City leaders have called it a humanitarian crisis. Since last year, Governor Abbott has sent thousands of migrants from Texas to cities other than Denver, all of them run by Democratic administrations. Colorado Governor Jared Polis said in a statement that the federal government must take action on immigration reform. He also said the issue requires collaboration. Mayor Hancock called Greg Abbott's move yesterday political theater and partisan gamesmanship. He added that he'll be happy to send Governor Abbott the bill for costs incurred by Denver because of Abbott's failure to manage his own state. For KGNU, I'm John Kellen.
The State Health Department has announced new measures to better protect vulnerable communities from air pollution. The Air Quality Control Commission voted Thursday to enhance its monitoring process to measure how much pollution is coming from specific locations and what the pollutants are. Health officials say they adapted rules after talking with residents in Commerce City who experienced the harmful effects of air pollution firsthand. Businesses that emit pollution must submit an environmental justice summary with their permit applications. They must also install equipment to further reduce emissions if it is financially and technologically within the company's reach. In a press release, the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment said the new measures meet and exceed Colorado Environmental Justice Act requirements. The Fort Collins City Council on Tuesday rejected a proposal to raise the local minimum wage. Before the 3-4 split vote, council members in opposition discussed conversations with local business owners who said the change could hurt the economy. The council considered implementing a minimum wage increase by 2026 of either $16 or $17 per hour. According to the Coloradoan, some restaurant owners said they were already paying non-tipped workers, such as line cooks, above the state's minimum wage. They said having to increase the pay of tipped workers could hurt business by forcing them to raise their prices for customers. In a press release, the Northern Colorado Labor Council said several low-wage workers showed up to the city meeting in support of the wage raise, citing struggles to keep up with basic living expenses such as housing and childcare. Fort Collins will continue to apply Colorado's minimum wage, which is $13.65 per hour for non-tipped workers and $10.63 per hour for tipped workers. Living wage calculations by the Massachusetts Institute of Technology indicate that for a single adult in Fort Collins working a full-time 40-hour week, a living wage is close to $19 per hour. For two adults with one child, it's almost $22 per hour. Colorado Senators John Hickenlooper and Michael Bennett, along with New Hampshire Senator Gianna Shaheen, are introducing a bill that would protect the reproductive health care rights of military families. The Protecting Service Members and Military Families Access to Health Care Act would codify the Department of Defense's 2023 policy to ensure service members and their families have access to non-covered reproductive health care in any state in which they are stationed. 40% of service women receive little to no reproductive care, such as in vitro fertilization or abortion services, which can affect military readiness. According to a statement by Senator Shaheen, quote, "Those most vulnerable to these dangerous laws are service women and military families who have no choice over where they are stationed and what state laws may govern women's bodies." With support from reproductive health care organizations and political sponsors, the bill will provide access to reproductive health care as well as privacy protection for all service members and their spouses. The Boulder Police Department for the first time gave one of its employees an award named in honor of the late Officer Eric Talley, who was killed in the King Soopers shooting on March 22nd of 2021. Officer Talley responded to emergency calls that day, running into the store along with his fellow officers. He was one of the 10 victims of the shooting. Officer Ryan Austin earned the Eric H. Talley Award at the department's annual ceremony on Wednesday for, quote, "helping others within the department both professionally and personally." Austin has been part of Boulder's police force for 15 years. For the first time since 2008, City of Boulder Park officials have spotted an American badger in the area. The Boulder Parks and Recreation Department posted a photo of the badger on social media Saturday. A park spokesperson told the Denver Post that they were keeping the location of the badger, which was caught on camera in April, a secret so that the animal remains undisturbed by humans. Cloudy today with more showers and thunderstorms expected. In Boulder, a high near 62 and a low around 47. In Denver, a high near 63 and a low around 47. In Fort Collins, a high near 65 and a low around 45. For KGNU, I'm Benita Lee.
You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm Alexis Kenyon. Tomorrow is World Migratory Bird Day, which means in honor of bird migration season, which is at its peak right now, Environment for the Americas will host more than 700 events across, or rather facilitate more than 700 events across the Western Hemisphere to celebrate and bring awareness to the millions of birds that are traveling across the globe. This year's local Boulder event will be held tomorrow at Walden Pond. Joining me to tell us more about the event and bird migration season is Dr. Susan Bonfield. Dr. Susan Bonfield, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you for having me today.
So to start, tell us about the event tomorrow. What can people expect?
Oh, we're so excited to have this event tomorrow. And, you know, we've been hosting this event for a number of years now in Boulder. But what you can expect is a number of bird walks. So if you want to join us early, you can come at 7:30 a.m. and meet expert Steve Fry. He'll lead the first bird walk of the day. Mm. We'll follow that up with another bird walk with another expert, a local expert, Dave Sutherland, and he'll lead a bird walk as well at Walden Ponds. We'll also have a bilingual bird walk at 9:40, so English-Spanish, if you're interested in that, or if you speak Spanish, we welcome you to come to meet Jose Barrientos, who will be leading that bird walk. Also at 9 a.m., we'll open it up to education stations. We'll have a number of different organizations offering activities for you to participate in, and this is good for, you know, kids and adults, so we invite everyone to come. We'll also have live birds of prey, so you can learn about them, and it'll just be a fun morning, and we'll wrap it up at about 1:15.
I have lived a lot of different places, and I think that I've seen more birds in Colorado and in this region than anywhere else. I don't know if that's a coincidence or what, but there are a lot of birds. And there are also a lot of protected habitats, a lot of them all over the place. Why does this area and why does Colorado have those protected habitats? And are there more birds in this area then, or am I just imagining things?
Well, I mean, I think there are a number of factors that could play into that. I don't know where you've lived, but it also, you know, I think just your awareness, of what's around you can change depending on where you live and, you know, how much you know about birds or, you know, what your consciousness is of your environment. Colorado has over 400 species of birds, and so there are a lot. I think we are especially fortunate here in Boulder to have a lot of open space that helps to protect birds, so we have a number of species, both resident and migratory. So you just might be noticing it more. You mentioned to me that you've been riding a bike, and mm-hmm. so maybe you're out more and you're noticing more birds than you did before.
What kind of birds should people look out for in this, across the Front Range and then as they go up into the mountains?
Oh, there's so many great species. Tomorrow, you know, if you can join us at Walden Ponds, sometimes we have white pelicans that pass through the area. They stop at Walden Ponds because it provides an important place for them to stop and to rest and to refuel before they continue their migration. You're going to see a lot of red-winged blackbirds. It has a great marshy area, which red-winged blackbirds love to use. They nest in that area. So they'll stop and stay here and construct their nests, raise young. Yellow warblers are also a wonderful species to see by water, and you can see them from here up into the mountains. So some species you'll find here, and you know, they'll also be at high elevations. But this is a beautiful little yellow bird that sings very loudly, actually amazingly. So we hope that we'll see that tomorrow as well.
So the theme of your bird migration event tomorrow is water. And I note that pollinators can be affected by pesticides, and there's been a lot of talk of that. Why is water the theme, and why is water important for birds?
Well, water is important for all human life and all life overall on our planet, right? And there are so many threats to migratory bird populations. It's difficult to choose one each year. But one thing that we do through World Migratory Bird Day is we choose an annual conservation theme. And I just want to explain that this is also coordinated globally. So Environment for the Americas runs the program in the Americas, which means that we have activities going on from Canada to Argentina and the Caribbean that we work with almost 1,000 organizations who help to coordinate those activities within their communities. But there are also events taking place all over the world, in Asia, Europe, Africa. So we're joined globally. One of the aspects of this conservation theme that we select is that we do this with our partners. So with the United Nations Environment Program and the Convention on Migratory Species, as well as the African Eurasian Water Bird Agreement and the East Asian Australasian Flyway Partnership. So this theme has to work for everyone. So every year we have a process. And this year water was selected because water is at risk. It's a little hard to think about that right now as it's raining in Boulder. And we've had considerable rain. But water is at issue. We know that there are considerable droughts in some places. Some parts of the country are in what's called a mega drought, which means they've been experiencing low water for a number of years. So just to the east of us, for example, Kansas, we had a program last week with one of the schools doing Migratory Bird Day. And they shared that the Cheyenne Bottoms, which is a critical stopover site for shorebirds, is actually dry. That causes great impacts to our migratory birds and to our resident and nesting species.
I mean, it seems like I wonder if it's just drought? I see birds, because you always see birds like swimming in the grossest waters. You know, you'll see ducks in a mud puddle, you know, or in water that looks really polluted and they seem fine. Is it fine?
That is such a good point, Alexis. Thanks for bringing that up. And no, it's not fine. There are other factors related to water that affect bird populations. It's not just lack of water, it's also water quality. And certainly water quality is impacted by a number of factors. One is chemicals, and another is plastics. So anything that we put into our water systems, you know, you think about the organisms that are feeding on that, or the organisms that are feeding on what's in the water. So, for example, birds like osprey who are feeding on the fish in the water, if those fish contain those contaminants, that goes up the food chain and it affects osprey as well.
I have noticed, as you as we were just talking about before the interview, that I've been biking to work because I got an e-bike, which is very fun. But I have started to notice the same birds in the same locations every day. And I'm wondering, why are these birds not migrating? Are they migrating? And why are they in the same area?
Good point. So some birds, you know, who migrate actually stop here. So I think you were talking about the red-winged blackbird, which is this beautiful black bird with these brilliant red shoulders that the male has, these red feathers on it. They're called epaulets that are on its wings. They set up territories as they begin to nest and breed. And what that bird is doing when you see it and it's the same place is it's defending that territory. You might also hear it singing, so it's working to attract females so that it will have a female mate to nest with. So that's what you're seeing. Some birds will fly over, so they might not stay here, but a lot of them will stay here and nest and spend the summer with us and then head back to non-breeding grounds.
Why are you hosting this year's event at Walden Pond?
Oh, we love Walden Ponds. It's one of the premier birding sites in Boulder County. It has a diversity of habitats there, and with our theme being water, it also has a, you know, a whole system of ponds that are so critical to some of the birds that pass through. So we see ducks, and like I mentioned before, the American white pelican uses that site, as well as shorebirds. And then, you know, there are the birds that depend on the habitats that are along the edges of water, so the cottonwoods that grow by water. That's a great place to teach about the importance of water to birds.
Well, is there anything that I missed or that you want to share about tomorrow's event or bird migration season?
No, it's just such a fun way to get in touch with your community and with the environment here. You know, even in Boulder, we have so many different habitats, from grassland to forest, pine forest to, again, Walden Ponds. And this is an opportunity for us to come together, for you to meet ornithologists and birders, for your to get to use a spotting scope and binoculars. We'll have those available for participants. So we just want everyone to come out, get to know the birds that depend on the habitats here, teach a few ways that you can help to conserve birds, and then, you know, hopefully that carries through the year as well. It's not just a one-time message.
Dr. Susan Bonfield is the Director of Environment for the Americas. To hear more about tomorrow's event, you can visit our news website. We'll have all the information posted there later today, news.kgnu.org. Dr. Susan Bonfield, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, and I hope to see you tomorrow.
You will. Up next, it's Sports Talk with Jimmy.
Celebrating KGNU's 45th birthday means that they were around before the three-point line, the required hockey helmet, and me, by like, a lot. Hello and welcome back to Sports Talk with Jimmy, the best of the best when it comes to sports shows here on KGNU. I, of course, am your host, Jimmy Searfoss, back again with more front-range news. And do you know why this is the best sports show here on KGNU? Because we can predict the future from here, the radio booth, here in the KGNU studios. Now, I'm not sure if you remember, but very recently we spoke about the possibilities of a very familiar Western Conference Finals if you are a Nuggets fan. And guess who is in the Western Conference Finals? The good old Nuggets versus the Lakers, and boy has it been exciting for Nuggets fans. If you are in purple and gold, you may be a little more upset to find that your team is down 2-0. This game last night saw the Nuggets make a late explosive push to pull away in the second half to secure their second consecutive win of the series. Now, why does that matter? Well, this marked the 8th game this playoffs that the Nuggets have won at home in a row this season. That's the longest anyone has gone undefeated at home in the playoffs ever. But that isn't the only reason the Nuggets' start in the Western Conference Finals is unique, because this 2-0 start is the best one the Nuggets have ever had in a Western Conference Finals. We talked last week that they didn't really go there very often, but when they did, the best start they'd ever had was 1-0, and that was against the Supersonics back in 1978. That's not even a team anymore. And not only is that good for the Nuggets, but teams that have started off 2-0 in the Western Conference Finals throughout NBA history, advance to the NBA Finals 90% of the time. Now, I hate to look ahead for the Nuggets, but when it comes to a run like this, we've had good experiences covering teams like this in the past. Last year, we did this same thing with the Colorado Avalanche as they went on their run towards their Stanley Cup championship. And then just this last week, we predicted that the Nuggets would advance to this stage in the playoffs. Now, I'm not going to say they're going to go to the finals, but it's looking pretty good right now. Also going on in Denver here is Coloradans doing what Coloradans do best. Run. The Colfax Marathon is coming up this weekend, and outside of the Boulder, this is pretty much the biggest running event in Denver. It has sold out its marathon, and combined with other events like the 5 and 10K, they are expecting around 36,000 runners to participate. I will not be running, but I'll cheer them on from the sidelines. So if you're not watching the Nuggets, go and get your exercise in, maybe run a few Ks, or don't, and just sit back and watch the Nuggets as they go on their run of their own. And that is just about all I've got time for you here on Today Sports Talk. I've been your host, Jimmy Searfoss. Wait till next week, where I'm going to have more for you here at this same time. We'll see you then.
Time now for .org, spotlighting the work of local nonprofits and co-ops.
I'm Steve Miller, and I spoke with Jack Kim, Executive Director of NAMI, National Alliance on Mental Illness.
We are the nation's largest grassroots mental health organization dedicated to building better lives for the millions of Americans affected by mental illness. Our vision is a world where all people affected by mental illness live healthy, fulfilling lives supported by a community that cares. And our mission that we hope will lead to that world is to provide advocacy, education, support, and public awareness so that all individuals and families affected by mental illness can build better lives. NAMI started as families around a kitchen table saying, we can't get help, we can't get support for our loved ones, we don't know what to do, but we know each other and we're going to help each other through this. Now, with everything being virtual like it is, our reach is much further. So I always think we serve Boulder and beyond. Let's say you're in Denver and you want a group that's not offered at NAMI Denver, you might join ours, especially if it's a virtual group. We're really available to anyone who finds help and meaning in our services. So in Boulder County, of the NAMI Signature Services, we regularly run support groups. Every NAMI program is run by state-trained either support group facilitators or class teachers. We have a connection support group, which is for any individual 18 years or older experiencing any kind of mental health condition. See if someone else has been in their shoes and can help them kind of understand what they're going through. What I love about this organization is it really brings people together in a way that helps them. Maybe you're on a wait list to get in to, treatment, or you don't have coverage for treatment with your insurance. But there are people who have been in similar situations that can say, yep, it can get better when you need to hear that. Or, hey, this one phone number wasn't available anywhere else, but I found it here and I'll give it to you. And people really come together in a caring way. I think it's about sharing our stories with each other and using our own unique journeys to help everyone else along. And we also have a family member support group, which is for basically all loved ones of someone experiencing a mental health condition. Those run regularly. Some are virtual, some are in person. We also have regularly scheduled family classes. We have one that's called NAMI Basics, and that is actually self-paced online that you can take at any time. For ideally, it's our parents of children elementary through high school. And then our family-to-family course, which is both virtual and online, is really for anyone with a loved one with mental illness. But typically, we find that participants in that class have adult loved ones. And both classes teach you everything you never learned. So if you're missing pieces in this experience on your journey and it's surprising you or you don't understand something, those are great sources of information. Whereas the groups are just amazing communities to join where we always say you are not alone. And that is a great place to experience that is in one of our support groups. If you are experiencing mental health conditions, if you have a loved one that you're trying to support, all you have to do is sign up. All of these programs are accessible through NAMIBoulderCounty.org. That's our local website. So everything I'm talking about now is going to be found on that site. And you can typically just go ahead and sign up on the site for most of these services. And what we have there where we don't do that work actively ourselves, we have a lot of resources to try to help find professionals who can navigate that a little more actively. And then what I always recommend is bring it right back to our support groups. Nothing is going to get traction at the moment, but it might in 6 months or a year. So you're keeping your foot in the door and you're learning about mental illness and you're learning about the resources that are out there and you are finding a community that understands. And maybe if you're feeling isolated, helps you feel a little less isolated in your experience. We do have a Colorado Crisis Services set up that you can call. And there are other local organizations like Mental Health Partners has been in town for a long time. They do great work, Rise Against Suicide. We'll connect you with those organizations if you have a more specific need, like if you're concerned about suicide or you want to learn about suicide awareness, you might find that linked on our page.
You've been listening to .org, KGNU's weekly look at local nonprofits. For more .orgs or for more information on this episode, visit news.kgnu.org. And that is all the time we have today. Special thanks to Benita Lee, John Kellen, Steve Miller, and Jimmy Searfoss for their help with today's program. Stay tuned for the BBC.